In Latin America, a wave of left-wing governments have been elected to office in recent years, challenging the US's historic domination of the region by seeking greater economic and political integration and independence from Washington. An exception to this trend is Colombia. Under right-wing presidents Álvaro Uribe and now his successor Juan Manuel Santos, Colombia's traditionally strong ties with the US have been deepened, particularly militarily. Colombia is now the third largest recipient of US military aid in the world, having received nearly $8 billion since the year 2000. And under Barack Obama, the US has plans to use 7 military bases in Colombia. This has worried many of Colombia's Latin American neighbors, whose governments have been on the receiving end of US intervention. For some, Colombia has become the US's enforcer in the region, the Israel of Latin America. The US says its billions are to help Colombia's army fight a war on drugs and to defeat left-wing guerrillas who have been fighting the Colombian government for nearly 50 years in a brutal civil war whose victims run into the millions. While human rights violations have been committed by all sides, the vast majority of these have been attributed to the Colombian army, security services, and right-wing paramilitary death squads closely aligned to them. Despite all this, US military aid continues to pour into Colombia. How exactly does the US intervene in Colombia's conflict? What role does Colombia serve for the US government? And what is the human cost of Colombia's civil war? We investigate.
Colombia vive un conflicto político, social y armado que ya lleva casi seis décadas de existencia. Tiene unas raíces económicas, sociales, políticas, culturales, que tienen que ver con la atrofia del tejido social y económico y con la precaria democracia que aquí existe.
Y a partir de mediados de la década de 1960, una confrontación entre dos grandes organizaciones guerrilleras y el Estado colombiano. Bueno, han surgido otros pequeños grupos guerrilleros, pero básicamente ese es el enfrentamiento entre las FARC, las Fuerzas Armadas Revolucionarias de Colombia, el Ejército de Liberación Nacional y las tropas gubernamentales. En medio de ese conflicto han aparecido otros factores. Por ejemplo, el Estado ha utilizado grupos y estructuras paramilitares que han sembrado el terror en muchas partes del país. E igualmente han aparecido las redes del narcotráfico, que de alguna u otra forma también hacen parte de este conflicto y de esta violencia. Así que es un cuadro supremamente complejo.
Si tenemos que ubicar la historia del país, del por qué hay un conflicto, una persona como yo que no conoce un solo día de paz en su país tendría que preguntarse es ¿cuándo comenzó y cuándo habrá paz? En este tema de la tierra yo creo que es fundamental para entender el conflicto en Colombia y digamos el statu quo.
El primer origen del conflicto es el tema agrario. Cuando los campesinos exigieron la reforma agraria y los latifundistas, con la tolerancia y la complicidad del Estado colombiano, armaron bandas de paramilitares que no se llamaban así en la época, estamos hablando de mediados de la década de los años 40 del siglo pasado, y que apuntaron a liquidar las cabezas visibles del movimiento agrario.
As in much of Latin America after independence from Spain, Colombia's ruling elites were divided between liberals, who pushed for modernization and free trade, and conservatives, who were often large landowning groups tied to the Catholic Church, who wanted to maintain conservative hierarchical social structures.
Las raíces de este conflicto se entierran en 1946, cuando empieza el gobierno conservador a incendiar las aldeas donde vivían la mayoría de la población era liberal.
A wave of liberal conservative violence was unleashed that continued until April 1948, when an event took place that shook Colombia to its core.
El asesinato de Jorge Eliécer Gaitán no es el inicio de este conflicto. Es el momento en que explota el conflicto. Para muchos campesinos en Colombia, la guerra comenzó ese día.
Gaitán was a politician known for his inspiring speeches that both lambasted Colombia's oligarchy and foreign capitalists and defended peasants thrown off their land and the poor. He had been elected the Liberal Party's leader in 1947 and was seen by Colombia's elite as a real threat to their interests.
El asesinato de Gaitán marca un antes y un después para entender al país y genera pues lo que aquí se conoce como el Bogotazo.
El Bogotazo was essentially an eruption of rage at Gaitán's murder. Areas of the country were taken, revolutionary councils were established, but it failed because of a lack of leadership and coordination and because of heavy repression from the Colombian army and conservative forces.
El Bogotazo was the first element in a longer period of upheaval known as La Violencia, which was characterized by its extreme barbarity. Between 1948 and 1953, 200,000 people were killed. Victims were tortured and mutilated, and gruesome killing methods were invented, such as a necktie, which left the victim's tongue hanging from a slit in their throat. The seeds for reprisals had been sown.
Estados Unidos ha jugado un papel clave para en la historia del país en general, ¿no? O sea, desde la pérdida del Canal de Panamá en 1903.
Apart from engineering Panama's secession from Colombia, up until the 1930s, the US intervened dozens of times in Central America and the Caribbean. These interventions were justified by the idea that the US had a destiny to expand and civilize other peoples. In 1823, President Monroe declared that the US would not tolerate external intervention in the Americas. Over the next 80 years, the US acquired the means to enforce this doctrine. But these interventions were costly.
Occupations were unpopular, cost lives and cost money. And by the 1930s, the United States was in the midst of an economic crisis. Under Roosevelt, the United States began to change the emphasis of its relations with Latin American countries towards trade and bilateral agreements. And over the next 15 years, the United States developed the political and economic instruments of what became the inter-American system that it dominated.
During the Second World War, the system was expanded to include a military dimension. As the war ended, the alliance with the USSR broke down. The US began to use its system to target what it called the communist menace.
Estamos hablando de una época en la que acababa de comenzar la Guerra Fría, en la que toda opción de izquierda y toda opción alternativa era vista como parte del enemigo. Para Estados Unidos, la estabilidad política es la estabilidad de sus intereses en la región. Y eso Estados Unidos indudablemente lo veía como una amenaza en el caso de Gaitán. Hay documentos desclasificados que nos hablan claramente de que días previos al asesinato de Gaitán, Estados Unidos donó tanques de guerra.
After the failure of the uprising that followed Gaitán's murder, the violence continued under successive conservative governments. The US continued to support the governments after Gaitán's murder. During the 1950s, US policy was dominated by a vehement anti-communism, and the late 50s saw the first US-backed and financed operations against the autonomous areas that had been colonized by communist peasants.
On the 1st of January 1959, an event took place that convulsed the US government's plans for Latin America. The US-backed Cuban dictator Fulgencio Batista was overthrown by Fidel Castro and his rebel army.
La revolución cubana genera tal miedo en Estados Unidos que Estados Unidos despliega una intervención a nivel continental que incluye dictaduras en el Cono Sur, intervenciones directas militares para que no se extienda la revolución cubana.
The Cuban Revolution changed the focus of US policy towards Latin America, towards preventing another Cuba.
Under Kennedy, the US began implementing the Alliance for Progress, which was meant to deliver economic growth and social justice. However, it failed to deliver, and its most lasting legacy was in the military arena, with massively increased funding and training of Latin American militaries. In Colombia, US military aid rose. In the 1960s, the US actually helped to draw up a counterinsurgency plan.
Con apoyo de Estados Unidos, atacan estos grupos de campesinos que no habían dejado las armas, eran campesinos comunistas. Ellos resisten durante algunos meses, finalmente entienden que si se quedan defendiendo sus fincas, si se quedan con sus gallinas y sus mujeres y sus hijos y su ganado, van a perecer todos, y resuelven los hombres de ese grupo de campesinos convertirse en guerrilla. Ahí surgen las FARC.
This was in 1964, and the FARC was essentially the rural wing of the banned Communist Party, nearly half of whose members were peasants. Although the FARC developed agrarian policies in line with Marxist-Leninist theory, it was an independent movement, which added to the spirit of the times, allowed it to grow rapidly, especially in rural areas. In 1964, another major guerrilla group, the ELN, was formed by middle-class students and intellectuals inspired by the theories of Che Guevara. A few other guerrilla groups sprang up, but none were as big as the FARC and the ELN.
Pero incluso antes de estas dos guerrillas importantes surge el paramilitarismo como una opción de mantenimiento del statu quo, como una doctrina que busca proteger, entre comillas, los intereses que están en el poder. Y el paramilitarismo surge muy, en una forma muy clara, a raíz de una misión norteamericana a Colombia.
By the 1960s, the United States had developed a national security doctrine that was taught at the School of the Americas, which is where the United States trained Latin American officers from across the region.
The US played an instrumental role in the development of Colombia's counterinsurgency. A military team sent to the country in 1962 recommended undertaking terrorist paramilitary activities against communists and helped to develop both the military and civilian aspects of the anti-guerrilla strategy.
En el año 77 comienza la Guerra Sucia nuevamente. Es decir, desaparición forzada, torturas.
The Colombian state treated civil society groups such as trade unions as just as great a threat as the guerrillas. The government of Turbay Ayala from 1978 to 1982 was the most repressive since La Violencia. All opposition to the government was viewed as subversive. This convinced many on the left that armed struggle was the only option, and guerrilla activity intensified.
The context for the late 1970s is the US defeat in Vietnam, the growth of the non-aligned movement, revolution in Iran, revolution in Nicaragua. These events all together helped to provoke the defeat of President Carter in the 1980 elections and the election of Ronald Reagan. In Colombia, it's the defeat of President Turbay and his replacement by Belisario Betancourt in 1982.
Después del gobierno de Betancourt viene el proceso de paz más avanzado hasta ahora.
Betancourt realized that Turbay's hardline approach had simply resulted in a resurgence of guerrilla activity. And once in power, he immediately announced an amnesty with them. While difficult years followed, in 1986, the FARC agreed to participate in that year's presidential election, and along with the Communist Party, formed the Unión Patriótica, or UP as it became known.
The UP had a broad appeal and a broad membership, and it became a pole of attraction for Colombians of all kinds who wanted social change.
In the 1986 presidential elections, the UP candidate Jaime Pardo Leal won nearly 5% of the vote. Many Colombians hoped that this would be a stepping stone for eventual victory at the polls. But under the presidency of Virgilio Barco from 1986 to 1989, these hopes for the UP were brutally crushed.
Pero si en el evento de que el enemigo lograre arrebatarnos nuestra vida, bienvenida la muerte, porque sabemos indiscutiblemente de la unión de jóvenes patriotas saldrán los que nos deban respaldar, los que nos deban representar, los que nos deban reemplazar, los que sigan dirigiendo lo que el pueblo quiere, una Colombia feliz.
The UP was subject to a campaign of systematic killings by paramilitaries linked to the Colombian state. 8 congressmen, 11 mayors, 13 deputies, 70 councilmen, and 2 presidential candidates were killed. An estimated 5,000 UP activists were killed in total. The genocide of a political movement. Jaime Pardo Leal was one of the thousands murdered, killed on the 11th of October 1987, reportedly with the involvement of the Colombian army. The father of current Congressman Ivan Cepeda was another of those murdered. Manuel Cepeda, a UP senator, was killed in 1994 by paramilitaries.
In the 1980s, the US generally had a good relationship with Colombia. Colombia was cooperating in the so-called war on drugs, and it was also adopting neoliberal measures, which made it popular with American business interests.
By the time Cesar Gaviria became president in 1990, a number of smaller guerrilla groups had laid down their arms. The greatest threat to Colombia's establishment now came from the drug cartels, whose power throughout the 1980s had grown to frightening proportions. The drug cartels made enormous amounts of money, and they used that money to buy land and political influence. The cartels also used their money to set up paramilitary groups that targeted supposed guerrilla sympathizers. With the left destroyed, the cartels moved from funding political campaigns to challenging the established political elite, and this eventually brought them into conflict with government. By 1989, Colombia's drug traffickers had declared war on the state, ushering in the biggest wave of urban terrorism the country had ever seen. The infamous drug baron Pablo Escobar offered $2,000 for every policeman killed, and car bombs were set off in the major cities.
So between 1990 and 1994, President Cesar Gaviria implemented a whole series of neoliberal reforms. These ironically benefited the drugs traffickers because they created a massive amount of unemployed and also took away the means of sustenance of large numbers of peasants who had to turn from coffee production towards the production of coca.
The presidency of Ernesto Samper between 1994 to 1998 was dominated by his alleged links with the Cali drugs cartel.
Las guerrillas dijeron, usted es un corrupto y nosotros no vamos a negociar con usted. Y la verdad es que durante ese cuatrenio ocurrieron dos cosas. La creación en el año 94 de las Autodefensas Unidas de Colombia y por otro lado comienza una ofensiva de parte de la guerrilla, una ofensiva militar sumamente fuerte.
The FARC did agree to talk to Samper's rival, Andrés Pastrana, and the promise of peace talks was the main reason for Pastrana's presidential election victory in 1998. President-elect Pastrana met the FARC's then-leader Manuel Marulanda, and both pledged to start peace talks. War-weary Colombians that saw these images on TV began to feel real hope that peace was on the horizon.
La Colombia comenzó en el mismo momento en que comenzaban también las conversaciones de la guerrilla de las FARC con el presidente Andrés Pastrana en el año de 1998. Ahí es cuando el gobierno pacta el Plan Colombia, que es elaborado, así se llama el Plan Colombia, es elaborado en los Estados Unidos, su texto original es en inglés, y que básicamente se sustentaba en la necesidad de fortalecer la fuerza pública con el argumento de que había que enfrentar el narcotráfico.
El Plan Colombia es un cambio de filosofía aparente, por lo menos en la letra, de la estrategia de Estados Unidos tradicionalmente en Colombia. Antes se había aplicado esta idea de la subversión, el peligro de la infiltración comunista, toda esa mentalidad de la Guerra Fría. El Plan Colombia trae una nueva fórmula y es hay que acabar con el narcotráfico. El principal enemigo de la seguridad nacional de Estados Unidos es el narcotráfico. El narcotráfico proviene de países como Colombia y por lo tanto hay que hacer una guerra frontal contra el narcotráfico. Pero detrás de esa tesis, lo que hay realmente es una estrategia de continuidad de profundizar el conflicto armado en Colombia, de perseguir, pues, en un primer momento a las guerrillas, pero también a toda la población y a todos los sectores democráticos.
With Plan Colombia came real doubts regarding the government's intentions, and peace became an even more remote possibility. Nevertheless, the US was delighted to work with Colombia, and collaboration between the military and paramilitaries grew to record levels, as did paramilitary numbers and violence. By the end of Pastrana's presidency, a severe economic crisis and the perceived intransigence of the guerrillas meant that many Colombians were willing to accept extreme solutions to the crisis. In stepped Álvaro Uribe, a hardline right-wing candidate who assumed the presidency in 2002.
Ahora, durante el gobierno Uribe, hay un discurso doble en el sentido de que el paramilitarismo se acaba a través de una negociación política que es falsa, que hoy está demostrado que es falsa y que está demostrado que es falsa también la desmovilización del paramilitarismo. Pero el discurso del gobierno Uribe es, se acabó el paramilitarismo, ahora las Fuerzas Armadas retoman la ofensiva contra la guerrilla y contra el terrorismo, y nosotros asumimos todas las responsabilidades. Eso se le termina reventando en la cara al propio expresidente Uribe, ¿no? La cantidad de denuncias por desapariciones, ejecuciones judiciales, masacres en las que hoy están involucrados militares directamente, ¿no?
Under Uribe, US involvement in Colombia was extended further, and in 2009, the US signed a deal to use 7 Colombian military bases. In response to a regional outcry, the US and Colombia claimed the bases would not be used as launch pads for operations in neighboring countries. But US Army documents outline that the bases provided an opportunity for conducting full-spectrum operations throughout South America, and listed what they called anti-US governments among the threats faced by US forces.
Era claramente un propósito de intervención continental. Y, por supuesto, además de ser una estrategia militar, una estrategia política, era, de alguna manera, obstaculizar el gran avance que había obtenido pues los gobiernos del continente a través de la formación de UNASUR, que es un pacto político, un pacto económico, una filosofía distinta en nuestro continente. Es decir, la posibilidad de que existiera un organismo regional distinto a la Organización de Estados Americanos, que como se sabe tradicionalmente ha estado sometida a los designios del Pentágono, de las administraciones de Estados Unidos.
In July 2010, Juan Manuel Santos, a key Uribe ally and his former Minister of Defense, became Colombia's president. It was too early to tell how far Santos was willing to go in continuing Uribe's hardline approach to the conflict. What was clear was that addressing the conflicts over land would be at the roots of solving Colombia's complex and bloody civil war. A war that the US government had played a major role in. It was time to speak to Colombians at the forefront of the country's human rights crisis, and to hear firsthand how the US government's military aid to Colombia was being felt on the ground.